Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Thursday, September 3rd, 2026 in the Gregorian calendar, and the 21st of Elul, 5786, in the Hebrew calendar. Now, let's get to the news. Overnight, Kuwait's military said its air defenses were currently engaging hostile missile and drone attacks, which are coming from Iran. The IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, launched strikes toward the Gulf, the second wave in 3 days after Kuwait and Bahrain also scrambled defenses against Iranian drones following a strike on a U.S. base in Jordan. The U.S. hit back, striking Iranian positions near the Strait of Hormuz, with President Trump saying American forces waited for Iran to rebuild a radar site and then, quote, hit it. The IRGC claims that it retaliated with a strike on a base in Jordan, which is Israel's neighbor in the north. And they've very much been a part of this ongoing situation. Closer to home, Israeli defense officials say the country is ready to strike Iran decisively if attacked during the upcoming high holiday period, which starts in a week, technically in 8 days, on Friday, September 11th. That's the first night of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Regular September 11th memorial services and commemorations, which happen here, by the way, in Israel, throughout the country, in order to honor the lives lost from that heinous terror attack by Al-Qaeda and 9/11, those are going to happen a day or two earlier on Wednesday and Thursday, since people will be preparing for the holiday on Friday and probably won't be able to attend those commemorations in the way that they would if it was a day apart. So those commemorations and memorials are happening a day or two early. Israel is releasing 5 Lebanese prisoners as a goodwill gesture aimed at moving talks with Lebanon forward. The move was discussed this week between Prime Minister Netanyahu and the U.S. ambassadors to Israel and Lebanon. The prisoners are Lebanese nationals held by Israel during the fighting and tensions along the northern border. At least one, 20-year-old Malik Kamal Ghazi, is described by Lebanese officials as a civilian who disappeared near the Israeli border in October 2025 and was later found to be in Israeli custody. The identities and circumstances surrounding the other 4 that are being released have yet to be made public. The move to release them comes even though Israel says the Lebanese army is not doing enough to remove Hezbollah infrastructure from southern Lebanon. But let's just say that Israel trying to make a goodwill gesture toward Lebanon is genuinely historic, and things have been changing so much in this region. I never would have thought that I'd be reporting this, but things are warming between Lebanon and Israel, and there's an effort to try to eradicate Hezbollah, the terror group that terrorizes Israel, terrorizes Lebanon, and controls the south of Lebanon and a lot of banks throughout Lebanon. On the political front, a new Channel 13 poll shows the race tightening. Netanyahu's coalition and the opposition are now tied at 53 seats each. There are many parties in Israel's parliamentary system, and each party gets a certain number of Knesset seats. Knesset is the Hebrew word for parliament. Parliament seats, based on how many votes that their party gets from the public. Then the parties need to band together to try to clear a majority, which would be 61. Since parliament, or Knesset, has 120 seats, you're going to want to try to get either a left-wing coalition or a right-wing coalition to come together, agree to work together, get 61 seats so that those parties can pass legislation that makes sense for their left-wing or right-wing agendas. If you want to be able to make moves, you need to have agreement, right? Well, the poll is showing that there's about 53 and 53 on each side. Neither is really working, whether it's right or left. Neither coalition is in a good position, according to this poll. That's a big change from just last week when the opposition had a 9-seat lead. Likud is also gaining on Gadi Eisenkot's Yeshar party, with Yeshar at 22 seats and Likud at 21, which is a big deal. Likud is Netanyahu's party. He's the prime minister. With the October 27th election coming closer, expect these numbers to keep changing. And remember, one poll is just one snapshot of where voters are at this moment. And a lot of times those right-wing parties don't really poll well. We know that from our analyst, Benjamin Moalem, but they sometimes don't show up well in the polls, but they have their voters showing out for them when it comes time to put those votes in the ballot box. On the ground in the West Bank or Judea and Samaria, depending on what you call it, President Herzog told CNN that Israeli authorities are making a major effort to stop settler violence. But he also acknowledged that most of the almost daily attacks on Palestinians do not lead to arrests. His comments came the same day that two Palestinians reportedly died during clashes in Al-Mugayim, a Palestinian village northeast of Ramallah, in the central West Bank or Judea and Samaria. Well, Ramallah is really a very Palestinian city. There's no Jews that live there. And it's considered to be like the capital of Palestinian West Bank. IDF personnel had entered the village to retrieve pets belonging to Israelis. We're still getting details about what exactly transpired there. There's been a lot of violence. There's been a lot of this one did this, and this one lit this one's house on fire. It's been a lot of cyclical action here for the negative, but tensions in the area are clearly high, and Israeli security officials have reportedly warned that violence in the West Bank could quickly trigger a much bigger escalation. Although I looked over in Haaretz newspaper today, and Palestinians are saying that they're not planning a big uprising, but that has been on the top of the security agenda for those who are in Israel, who are working on security in the West Bank or Judea and Samaria, however you call it. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs. Israeli politics are world politics, and I've been saying that since 2020. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us at israeldailynews.org and click donate to make sure we continue operating. And if you listen to our show, then I'm sure you want us to continue. The season of gifting is upon us. Rosh Hashanah is just over a week away on September 11th. And if you're looking to send some honey from the Holy Land, now is your chance with Hasod. That's hasodstore.com. And Israel Daily News customers get a discount if you put in the code IDN10. At checkout, you get 10% off orders over $100, and you'll also be supporting Israel Daily News because we get a part of that gift money. So you can send a gift to a loved one or a family member or to yourself, and you can also support Israel Daily News. Today, you are actually going to see for yourself. I'm actually going to unbox a Hasod box live on camera right now, thanks to our big sponsor out in California, Marianne Vollinger. She works very hard, and she sent this one over. So stay here. We're going to open up this box. It's heavy, and it's big. I'm going to show you what it looks like. It's beautiful. And obviously, if you're having it shipped overseas or out of the country, it's going to be packaged up in a box. But I'm very close to the origin of where these boxes are coming from. So I had it sort of delivered locally. First of all, I love these cards. I don't know about you, but I love drawings, paintings. So we have these beautiful little note cards. Shana Tova, I'm going to have to fill out this postcard and send it maybe overseas. First of all, I don't want to break this. We have a wine from it's local Israeli wine, the Emerald Riesling. I personally love white wine. I stopped drinking red wine. Because Israel is a very hot climate and we have a lot of great Israeli white wines, and they give me migraines, which I learned from my neurology doctor here in Israel. So that's going to go in the fridge, and it's going to definitely be a great gift if I get invited for a meal. We have amazing tea, Adanim. This is a local tea. I happen to love it. I love this. This is the pomegranate, and I also like the mint. Oh, we have. Now, it doesn't match my outfit, okay? This doesn't match my outfit, but I wear a lot of scarves that I get from the Hasod boxes. And this is, oh, what is this? This is beautiful. I love it. It has a little clip over here, like a magnetic clip. This is stunning. This is going to be so useful when we get a breeze coming in the night here in Israel. It'll be hot for the next few months, but at night, sometimes it gets chilly. I love this. This is new. I think this might be my favorite thing in the box. This is very pretty. Now, we here in Israel and Jewish people celebrating Rosh Hashanah, we use a lot of honey. I love getting this local delicious honey. I don't buy other honey. I only get honey from Hasod, and I always get a lot of it around the New Year's time, and it lasts me for a good while. So I have that. We also have this little baby honey, which I will bring with me wherever I go. I really love this Moroccan mint tea. We have this. We've got a couple of boozy apple cocktails. That'll be fun. That'll be fun. We have some candles for Shabbat. Rosh Hashanah comes in this year on Shabbat, on Friday night. So these are going to be very useful for lighting candles. Holy cacao. It's delicious chocolate. It's actually the only chocolate that I eat. I'm kind of bougie. I got to eat good chocolate. We have an Emmanuel Beautiful Art spoon rest. I always need a spoon rest. I'm cooking a lot, you guys. I cook a lot. And we have the pomegranate and honey jam. I love this. I've tasted it. I love a good jam, and this one happens to be delicious. Okay, I'm obsessed with my box. The issue is going to be holding on to these things and not eating or drinking them before the holiday comes in on Friday. That's going to be the hardest part. I'm glad that you guys all got to get a look at what we have in these boxes, because you don't know it if you don't get to see it. Don't forget that you get 10% off with the discount code IDN10 at checkout. That is hasodstore.com, H-A-S-O-D store.com. Hasod means secret. It's an Israeli company shipping to the U.S., Israel, countries all over the world, and every purchase with our discount code supports our work. It's a win-win. Feminist icon Gloria Steinem has died at the age of 92. The American journalist, author, and activist became one of the most recognizable leaders of the women's movement, not only in the United States, but she definitely inspired the world, co-founding Ms. Magazine and spending more than five decades fighting for women's rights and equality. Well, she definitely laid the groundwork for me to be in my role today. Absolutely. She had a breakout moment in 1963 when she went undercover as a Playboy bunny at the Playboy Club in New York City for Show magazine at the time. Her expose highlighted low pay and sexist working conditions. It did make her famous, although she said that it actually hurt her ability to get serious journalism assignments at the beginning of her career. Steinem was born to a Jewish father and a Presbyterian mother. She was raised largely secular, but she spoke about her connection to her Jewish heritage and said her mom was very supportive of it. She has visited Israel, although she became a vocal critic of Prime Minister Netanyahu just a handful of years ago. She actually said that she had dinner with Netanyahu back in the 80s when he was Israel's ambassador to the United Nations. Steinem called him a conversational bully when she was asked about that dinner years later. Steinem died Wednesday at her home in New York City. That's where I was born and raised. She was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2013 and continued writing and advocating for women's rights well into her 90s. And she died at the age of 92. I just have to really pay homage to the women who worked tirelessly to be seen, for their writing to be shown and read, and for women's rights everywhere. Thank you, Gloria Steinem, for all the work that you did. And I try to shine in your legacy. Here's a story hitting close to home for anyone turning on the tap this week in Israel. Five of Israel's six desalinization plants have shut down again, this time because of unusually murky, turbid seawater that the plants cannot process. It's the second time that this has happened in the last several weeks. Local authorities have been told to cut consumption, and farmers are sounding the alarm about what a prolonged shortage could do to crops and livestock. Israel built its entire water security in this country around desalinization technology. By the way, I know the person who is behind it. He's not even that old, by the way. And this week, it's a pretty stark reminder of what happens when the technology hits a wall that nobody planned for. Meaning, we used to get almost all of our water from the Kinneret, Lake Kinneret in the north of Israel. Now, because of desalinization, we don't have to drain our lake for fresh water. We have desalinization. We actually desalinate salty seawater to provide us water. And that's a technology that Israel has actually exported and helped other countries use. Okay, first of all, throughout Africa, our neighbors in the Middle East, there's a lot of connections and business transactions that happen that you wouldn't expect between Israel and other countries in the area, because they don't want people to know that they're doing business in Israel. But this is a technology that we're really known for. I actually personally noticed that the taps along the beach were not working this week, and I wasn't able to rinse off my feet. But maybe this is the answer for that. Maybe our desalinization plants going down have affected the water fountains around the city. We're going to have a note that relates to that a little bit later on in the show. Here is an update to a story that caught my attention last week. A Jerusalem cafe says that it is not opening on Saturdays anymore after 2 months of weekly protests outside the business. Orthodox Jewish protesters did not want Cafe Basimta to operate on the Sabbath in Jerusalem. Cafe Basimta is run by the Christian missionary organization Jews for Jesus and had become a regular gathering point for Orthodox Jewish protesters, who are opposed to the cafe opening up on Saturdays because business is not supposed to be conducted on Saturday. It is the Holy Sabbath, and you're not supposed to swipe your credit card or pay money or order things. It's supposed to be a day of rest. Any missionary group, especially Jews for Jesus, is highly contentious in Israel because Jews do not believe and are not permitted to proselytize. That means to try to get other people to join your religion. The cafe says demonstrations included attempts to break in and block customers from entering the establishment. Management says that it made the decision to close on Shabbat, on the Sabbath, on Saturday, to prevent further escalation and lower the flames. I know that some people really who don't keep Shabbat liked that cafe. They wanted to go to that cafe. They felt comfortable making orders on Saturdays, and they were pretty upset about this. They were upset about being targeted. They felt that, that everybody should have their own place. Well, that's according to the papers from last week that we're seeing. Some people are upset because they're being boycotted, and some people are upset because they can't get their coffee from their local cafe on Saturday. Last night, I hosted one of my Sunset Series events for the Tribe Tel Aviv nonprofit organization that I run with Rabbi Jonathan Feldman here in Tel Aviv. It was so fascinating. The nonprofit supports internationals and newcomers who want to get caught up onto speed about what's going on with Israel. And we also cover business and the arts and anything that I think a person in their 20s or 30s living in Israel should be exposed to right now. I just book anyone that is a professional that really should be speaking to young people and anyone that young people should be hearing from. I invited Tel Aviv University's top Iran scholar, Professor Meir Litvak, and he did not mince words. He spoke for an hour and then took questions, and you could hear a pin drop, okay? Every person was engaged in this talk. He hit the room with a number of corrective narratives. A few that really stuck out to me, and I'm just going to list them off right here. This was off memory, okay? This was from what I remembered from his talk. He says the IRGC killed more like 7,000 protesters in Iran, not 30,000, which is the number that you're seeing throughout all the papers, though he said that the regime killed more protesters in 2 days than the former Shah did across the span of 3 decades. He said the regime is still working to jail or kill protesters who participated in marches back in January. If you remember, there were some big protests in Iran at that time. He also said Netanyahu's claim that Israel obliterated the nuclear threat for generations to come is really more actually like an 8-month timeline, meaning that Israel quelled that threat for just 8 months, which was really scary to hear. And everybody kind of responded to that audibly. He did note, however, that Iran's society is deteriorating all on its own. They have their own water crisis there, which is what I was talking about that we're having here at the moment. But they have a big water crisis, okay? A water crisis that basically in 20 years from now, no one's going to have water. They have brain drain because most math and science professionals are leaving the country for work. And they're trying to make up their lives elsewhere. And Meir Litvak, the professor, actually talked about one of his students who went to a math competition, and there were some Iranians there. This was before the war. And he asked that student of his where those Iranians are today. None of those mathletes from Iran are in Iran today. They all left. Okay, we're talking about the top brains. That is brain drain. He also talked about an aging population being an issue in Iran. Think about this. Their economy is doing so poorly that young people don't want to have kids, or they can't afford to have kids, so they're not having kids. Meanwhile, the elderly population is just, there's not enough repopulation. There's not enough young people, and there's a lot of old people. And he says that this society is eroding from the inside out. It's eroding in a pace that within 20 years, society could collapse, is what the professor said. And he said that that is going to do more damage than any airstrike from Israel ever could do to the country. He also said the only people who actually think that the crown prince, the son of the former Shah, Mr. Reza Pahlavi, who's living in California, the only people who actually think that he could make a comeback are two pockets: the Iranian expats in Los Angeles and some hopefuls here in Tel Aviv. Because somebody asked him that question during the Q&A, and he said that's a limited thought group. That's only something that you and your peers think, because that's the echo chamber you're in. He said the broader community doesn't believe that that's going to happen. He said that the whole narrative is off, and that only a couple of Jewish Persian sectors of the world actually want to see that happen. I did not record the whole session, but I did take very careful notes, and I have a full write-up coming out on our website, israeldailynews.org, if you want to really read more about what Meir Litvak said. We're the only news outlet that has it. And I have to say, he didn't talk general. He talked with details, and he gave us a lot of stuff to think about that we didn't know about Iranian society. And he opened up by saying that they really, really, really believe that the Jews are at the bottom of the list, and that they are infidels and they need to be removed. So, and they also believe there's a superiority, that they believe that they are the best in the region, and that they should be the leaders of the Arab world because they have better reading and writing skills. This is what Professor Litvak said. It was very interesting. He himself is half Persian, and some of his students from TAU, or former students, showed up to our talk last night. That's how much they wanted to hear him speak. I guess they didn't get enough of him in the classroom, and it was really an eye-opening talk, so please go over to our website to read more. Tonight, I'll be hosting a special panel for the Her Tel Aviv Olot Festival, and the panel is called Jewish Women Changing the World. And honestly, the lineup is kind of good vibes. It's the kind of good vibes that Israel needs right now. I'll be talking with Ora Korazim, who chairs WIZO Israel, an organization that's been quietly holding up Israeli women for decades. They run shelters. They help survivors of abuse. They give free legal counsel, child care, and support circles for women who are going through divorce and separation. Then we have Dr. Lee Livne, who spent the last 12 years building an online community of 35,000 women, mostly international women in Israel, who are looking to help and support one another with recommendations, insider Israel daily living advice. You know, people write in there like, who has a reliable babysitter or cleaner? Her group is called Bel Aviv. You may have heard of it. And it now generates more than 3,000 posts a day. It's all held together by a team of volunteer moderators here in Israel. She's actually a marine biologist in her day-to-day life. And she runs all of this for the international women's community here in Israel on her own. with this small team of volunteers. So we're going to ask her questions about that tonight. And finally, we have Yocheved Ruttenberg, who might have the wildest origin story of the three. She was 24, living in Dallas, Texas, working in sales, pretty disconnected from the Jewish community. October 7th hit. 1,200 people were killed here in Israel. 250 were taken hostage. Days later, she landed in Israel with 23 duffel bags of donated supplies, and she never used her return ticket. She spent the last 2 years building Sword of Iron, which is the fastest growing volunteer movement in the country. She has more than 40,000 volunteers who are mobilized throughout the country, and they come from all over the world. I've actually met a few of these people. They come to Israel from all over the world, not just Jews, a lot of non-Jews. I met a lot of people from Australia who came to farm and volunteer. Pretty incredible stuff. If you're in Tel Aviv tonight between 7 and 7:45, come over to the Her Tel Aviv Festival on Schenken Street in the center of Tel Aviv. There's going to be 50 booths. There's going to be dance classes. There's going to be snacks. And it's all run by the international female community. And if you don't have a chance to come, I'll give you the highlights on social media, on my personal social media page at Shanna Fold. My name has two N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. Or I'll update you here next week in the podcast. And now for a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
We've finally reached the end, the seventh Haftorah of consolation between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah. And it ends off with in the last verse, B'chol tzaratam lo tzar, in all of their trouble. This is a little bit complicated to translate here, because it says lo tzar, which is written in the Haftorah, lamed aleph, which means not, no, right? So in all of their trouble, there's no trouble, right, for God. And however, according to the tradition that we have passed down from our ancestors all the way back to Moses on Mount Sinai, well, this is the Haftorah, so all the way back to Isaiah, I guess, is that it's read lo lamed vav, which means to him, right? And so, therefore, when it's read, we're with the understanding, even though they sound exactly the same, we have the understanding that it doesn't say in their troubles, there's no trouble. In their trouble, he is troubled. There's trouble for him, meaning for God. Now, the implication of this is that if we say that there's no trouble, it means it's like as if God doesn't feel our pain. Whereas if you say, lo, he has trouble, that means when we're in trouble, when we have difficulties, God does feel our pain. And this can be explained by noting the difference between the written and read forms, right? The aleph versus the vav, like I said before. Aleph is a permutation of the word pella, which means a wonder, right? So this is an allusion to God's transcending all of creation, right? And from that divine vantage point, so then in a certain sense, you could say, yeah, nothing bothers him, right? What is anything in this world? How does that affect God? The letter vav, on the other hand, is a vertical line. It's written like a vertical line. And this represents how God descends, so to speak, into the created world in order to relate to it. And from that perspective, then of course, God does indeed feel our pain and responds to it. And the fact that both spellings are represented in the same word indicates to us that both perspectives are true. And that once God does feel that pain, and does relate to us on that level, so then the transcendent level of godliness also is there with us in our pain and overrides from that high vantage point, that pella, that wondrous vantage point of beyond creation, overrides our pain and comes in to rescue us from beyond the limitations of nature. Now, according to Kabbalah, the letter Aleph is representing the sphera of Keter, right? This emanation of godliness, which is completely beyond creation, like I mentioned before. Whereas the Vav refers to Teferet, which is, if you know a little about the Kabbalistic map, you can look it up later online or something, right? It's the central focal point, that line that goes from the top all the way down to the bottom. So it's the central axis. And it goes from one extreme to the other, all the way from the top, right, to Keter, to the beyond creation, all the way down to the bottom, drawing that high transcendent level into our reality. And so Teferet is also then associated with God's empathy and mercy, his rachamim, right? Bringing in from a higher level, what is mercy, right? Kindness is just you give, give, give. It doesn't matter whether it's good for you, bad for you, it doesn't matter. Gevura, strength, stringency, that is holding back. Do you deserve it? If you don't deserve it, why should I give it to you? And rachamim, mercy, is, you know what? I know that, you know, maybe you haven't done the best. I know things aren't so great, but you know what? I'm going to have mercy, and I'm going to judge favorably and give you anyway, even though I know you don't deserve it. And so this is the aspect of godliness that we are begging for and yearning for as we come to Rosh Hashanah. And we've done an introspection during this month of Elul, saying, God, you know, I know this year and all past years, I probably have not been doing the best that I could. But we ask, please, to forgive us, to judge us favorably, and to be kind to us and gracious and merciful, and give us a happy and sweet new year. Shana Tova.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, September 3rd, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 25 degrees Celsius and a high of 32 degrees. That's 77 for Fahrenheit, going up to 89 degrees for the high. And yes, there is a heat warning out today. So drink that water, even if you're inside. It's really hot. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. That's the newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. Plus, I always put a personal note at the top where I write about what I'm working on, what I'm feeling. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in. I want to give a thank you to our news writer, Perry Schwartz, who's been on top of our updates this week and does a lot of fact checking for our show. Our editor and assistant producer, Lori May. Thank you. And Monday, we have a little change in the schedule. I'll be giving a speech for Hadassah, the women's organization in Jerusalem. So our Monday news podcast is set to come out on Tuesday next week. Have a great and productive day and an easy end to your week. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.